Good Tuesday, everybody. Welcome once again to the best of BTL Bass Talk Live. All right, folks, we're going to go back to November 17, 2015, and we're going to talk a little beer. No, it's not Beer Talk Live, but we had Jeff Sprague on the show on November 17th, and he talked a little bit about his Keystone Light deal. That was really his first big sponsorship on the FLW Tour. Hey, and let's face it, the dude rocked it this year on the BPT, had a great, great season, and he was a rookie in 2014. And on this show in November of 2015, he talks about some of the challenges, some of the things that he had to adjust to, some of the things that he had to fix, really some of the struggles that he had those first couple of seasons out on the FLW Tour. Also, Matt and I, hey, we get into a little OU football. It was a big game that OU had against Baylor during that time. Some comments about post-it note questions, whatever that was. And then the decisions that have to be made this time of the year when November rolls around when it comes to sponsorships. So a great show. Hope you enjoy it. Hey, pop open a Keystone Light and listen to the best of with Jeff Sprague. Good morning, everybody, and welcome once again to a week of BTL Bass Talk Live, where we're going to talk bass fishing and anything else that we want to talk about. And Matt, I'm telling you, had a great weekend. Sooners get it done in Baylor. Very entertaining game, but one thing I got from that game, people in Waco, Texas do not like Sooners.
Let you go into why, but let me just say this. I was asleep at 7:37. I got to see the Sooners three and out, and I got to see Shaq Linwood break off that big run, and I fell asleep. I was at Eufaula Fish in the Bass Nation. I had been up since 2 a.m. that morning. I had gotten up, picked up Mean Gene Gilliland. We had driven to Eufaula, fished all day long, made a zillion casts, went and checked into the hotel. And I was asleep by 7:37. I saw four plays of that game, and it wasn't by choice. I'd been looking forward to it for weeks. It was exhaustion. It was exhaustion. So I actually got to see the game yesterday on Fox Sports.
They replayed it.
So, but anyway, go ahead. So why do Wacoans not like
the whole concept that they kicked our butts over the last 2 years? There was a little cockiness down there in Waco, Texas, and I don't think a whole lot of people gave OU a chance, even with a freshman quarterback that Baylor threw out there. But you could see, and I don't know another term to use, but a little bit of I can't even go down that path. It hurts me to even say that word, so I'm not going to say it. I'm sitting here trying to think of another word that I could use. Let's just say the tables were shifted.
A little hubris?
Dude, I'm a bean counter. I don't even know what that means. What does that mean? Hubris.
No, obviously that goes back to the, I believe
hubris.
It's
a, is that a Roman term?
No.
Humphrey?
No, it's like a Roman deal that goes back to, it's like overconfidence that leads to your demise.
Maybe.
Basically, it's...
The thing I don't like, and we don't see this in fishing a lot, I don't like people just shoving it back in their face. You know, the one thing that I did take from watching the game, and I don't know if you saw it in the replay, I think the over and under for the times that the F-bomb was used, caught on camera, was like at 5. I guarantee
it
was more than 5.
With the fans or the players?
No, with the players and the coaches. And I'm not talking about the Baylor people either.
No,
I was really
kind of disgusted. Yeah, did you hear, and I don't even remember who
you're
it was.
You're disgusted?
I was.
You just want to pretend that you live in a la-la world where F-bombs don't get thrown
no,
around.
No, I'm not saying that.
Nation.
The way that, dude, when a guy gets kicked out of the game and he tells the crowd, why don't you go F yourself? Not a whole lot of class. Not a whole lot of class on that. You agree?
Sure. That's a low class move.
So I very disappointed in the way that.
I mean, how is
some
that? How is that the
down.
Same? To the same degree, isn't that kind of like certain outspoken anglers who have less than stellar derby?
Yeah, but they don't walk off the stage after a bad day and tell crowd, "Why don't you go F yourself?"
No, but they say. They get up on stage and say, as far as I'm concerned, they can fill your lake in with concrete, and I hate this place, and I hope we never come back. And you better,
it's not the same.
You better, you know, practice catch and release, because if you catch one of the nine that live here, you just took out 10% of the population.
That's funny. Nothing wrong with that.
Cliff Crochet said, for all he's concerned, they could fill every lake in Oklahoma with cement. And it, except the Arkansas River, and it wouldn't hurt his feelings at all.
I know. So everything's setting up. Do you think if OU runs the table, do they get in the Final Four?
I have no idea. It's a bass fishing show, not a college football show.
Doesn't matter. Dude, I could care less. We could talk about anything we want. And I'm very intrigued by this whole Final Four thing, because I think you're going to get into a situation where people that have performed, teams that have performed, are going to get shut out. Not the case in the Elite Series, is it?
No, I think they get in.
They get in. Now, there is a lot of discussion.
OU is going to pull a Todd Faircloth.
There is a lot of discussion that this is going to be the year where some guys get shut out of the Elite Series. You know, Kurt Dove had him on. He's very concerned.
Kevin Ledoux, very concerned.
Very concerned. And how much longer are they going to basically hang these guys out there to where decisions need to be made? And not that sponsorships are just oozing all over the place for
these
guys to capture.
You don't
want to
go into the holiday season not knowing.
No.
You want to know if you
can. That's why.
If you can get the Butterball turkey, or you go to the Aldi's and get one of the little freezer dried turkeys, save a few bucks. I mean.
Yeah. So there is a little crossover there. All right. You perform and you're not going to get in. That's why they need to expand it to an 18 playoff rather than four.
Speaking of performing.
Beers and Bassin. That's what we're going to talk, isn't it?
Well, I wasn't going to talk about that right now. But, I mean, that's what we're eventually going to get to. We had lengthy conversations about the Bass Nation and the format of the so-called.
Yeah, I hear a lot of people are pissed off.
Federation. What do you mean?
That's what I'm hearing.
From who?
There's like a revolt or something taking place. Is that true?
No, I haven't heard that.
Haven't heard that?
Anyway, so I had the second Bass Nation.
Yeah, you're trying to get 12 spots out of 14 guys.
10 out of 14. So there are four guys who aren't going to make it.
You perform and you're in.
Yeah, well, I perform.
Even if it's half-assed,
I performed, I think I'm in. Anyway, on day two, it'd been a long time since I'd just gotten just thrashed from the back of the boat.
It happens.
I had a 19-year-old kid, and we're talking for a young kid, very respectful. If I retied a lure, he didn't cast.
Amazing.
I said, dude, I said, keep hucking. I said, it's not. I mean, you don't have to stop fishing just because I can't tie a palomar knot.
There's no timeout, man.
Just keep days. Oh, I'm good, dude. Wouldn't cast in front of the boat. Three fish limit for him, five for me. He called three times before I had a bite.
So he kicked your ass.
Classic.
All right, here.
Classic.
Here is the question
kicking.
For everybody out there listening and watching. Did you ask him for either a lure or a bait that he was using knocking him out?
So he calls three times.
Come on.
And I finally catch one. And he calls again. And he's back there. And he's using. I said, I got a balance beam in there. And they're not big fish or 15 and a half inchers. Yeah. But he's caught seven keepers. Yeah. I've caught one.
He's smoking them.
He was catching them on chatterbait. Well, I knew that this Eufaula is good for chatterbait. So I go back and get my chatterbaits. I realized I spent 20 minutes 2 days before organizing my chatterbait box, which I then left on my kitchen counter. I had no chatterbaits in the boat. This kid, unsolicited, goes, dude, I got plenty of them. Here, tosses me a chatterbait. I said, I'm not even going to pretend to be proud. And I tied it on.
Yeah.
And I catch my limit. I end up catching my limit on the chatterbait directly in front of him. Meanwhile, when I start throwing his chatterbait, he switches to a buzzbait, which I had just been throwing, and he catches a 4.5 and a 3.5 behind me. Anyway.
He smoked him on
you. So, yeah, I used his bait. He kind of showed me where I needed to be thrown. I was in the right area, but I was just fishing it wrong. And I mean, that's what I call being opportunistic.
So basically, you beat four other guys, because that's really all you had to be, four other guys, with the help of a 19-year-old out of the back of the boat.
My 19-year-old co-angler who's been tournament fishing for 2 years showed me the bait and the pattern.
Hey, man.
I was in the right area. Nothing wrong with that. I was in the right area.
Now, did you make him pay for gas?
No. Okay, so this is where he became even a better co-angler. So let me borrow that chatterbait. So yeah. I cut the chatterbait off, and he'd been throwing a Lunker Lure buzzbait. He was talking about how he had two of these Lunker Lures, and one of them broke. So he was down to his last Lunker Lure. Well, we're fans of the Lunker Lure original buzzbaits. I've got a big Tupperware deal with probably 75 of them in there, and I went and I pulled a couple of them out and I tossed them on the back deck at the end of the day, you know, when I gave him the chatterbait back, and I said, here, dude. And he goes, oh, those are the ones, those are cool. And he tosses them back to me, and I was like, no, man, I tossed those to you, you can keep them, I appreciate you letting me use the chatterbait, now you've got three Lunker Lures. He goes, oh, cool, thanks. And I didn't want him to pay for gas or anything. Because, I mean, that was, he's the only reason I caught fish.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd have had like two.
You wanted to take care of him.
Right.
Yeah.
So he gets a truck. He could back a trailer perfect. Gets it on there. And as we leave, shakes my hand. Dude, I had a great time. Thanks. Like, he won the co-angler side, by the way, leading it for the state. He goes, dude, I really appreciate it. Oh, yeah, I left money in your glove box. See ya.
Wow.
Left me a $20 bill in the glove box, and we only ran probably 6 miles of gas. By the time I got back and looked, he was
so where'd you catch all your fish at?
Right outside of Eufaul Cove. I spent 7 hours outside of there, dude. Hey, you got a job to do. You know what you had to do. Geez. I mean, why?
So you caught three treads, basically.
I had one clean one.
So let me.
Now then,
summer,
we went into another spot where we caught a couple too. But the bulk of it was within inside of the off limits area. Release fish. Yeah. Hey.
Whatever it takes to get you there, right?
Don't hate it.
Wow. Hey, it goes back to the theory. What, retreads, riprap, bridges.
BMR squared, bridges, marinas, riprap, and ramps. And I was fishing riprap right next to a ramp outside of a marina.
Where every single fish is weighed in on Lake Eufaula, just about. That's impressive, man. Gotta give it up to you.
I was the only one who did it.
Hey, at least you were man enough to say, give me that freaking chatterbait. Heck yeah, I'll tie it on.
Absolutely. That was one of the things I learned from fishing the opens. I didn't even realize in the first open, I thought it was a strict boater, go do your thing. Right? Someone say something?
No.
I thought it was a strict go do your thing, co-angler stay in the back. I didn't realize you could team up, work together. Well, I get a friggin' local stick who tried to get in on the boater side.
Yeah.
And I didn't listen to the guy. I should have said, okay, have at it. You're in the back of the boat. Let's go wherever you want to go. I talked to a lot of other guys in the opens, and they're like, oh, you draw a local like that? Heck yeah. You friggin' go where he wants you to go. Run where he tells you to run. You know, within reason. You don't want to get some asshat who tells you to run through the stump field because 6 years ago he was a co-angler, his boater caught him back there.
No, I'm with you, man. Well, excellent job this weekend, man. I'm proud of you. Sounds like you had a great weekend.
It was fun.
Now, where do you go from here?
Nothing. I'm done. I don't get
to No. You made the top 10?
I think. I'm in second right now by one point out of first for lead out of the 14.
Then why would you not be in the top 10 then?
Because everyone gets to drop two. And I'm not a mathematician. I'm not a bean counter like you. So I'm hoping.
Is there one more tournament?
Yeah, there's one more that I'm not going to get to go at. So I'll get double zeros for that. I needed four scores. And the next regional on
where?
Lake Gunnersville in April, which I believe we've been there before.
Yeah, that's like take a number.
So.
Be take a number.
We shall see.
All right. Today's show, kind of interesting. We're going to talk a little beer and bassin, right, Matthew?
Yeah. last week, I think it was last Friday or Thursday, get the old FLW press release that Miller Coors is back with FLW in 2016.
Of the recent merger.
And Jeff Sprague, we followed him, with our over at Bass Zone. He was one of our guys that we talked to before every tournament during his rookie year in 2014. Yeah. Just, I think, barely missed the cup this past year. Has had some good finishes. Anyway, he's the guy now in his second year. He's wrapped with the old Keystone Light wrap. So I said, hey, we'll have him on. We'll talk about him. And his team deals are a little interesting dynamic going on over at FLW right now. So we'll talk to him about being back with the on a team deal over at FLW and some other stuff going on.
By the way, I did get an email from Mr. Opinger.
Opinger.
Did I not say his name right?
No, you didn't.
Opinger.
Opinger. Opager. Opinger.
You can't even say it right.
It's not Opinger because I know I've called him Opinger, but then when you get his voicemail, I think it's Opager. I don't know. I'll have to call him, and if he answers, be like, hey, let it go to voicemail.
He sent me an email. It was very complimentary about the comments that I made on Ike Live about 20 feet deep. And he said, yeah, you guys are dead on. Those things rock. You need more of them. So very nice there. But we will look forward to finding out. I don't know how much Jeff is going to talk about. I don't know how much he can talk about.
What was I supposed to get Joe on the show for? I remember I'm booking guests, and I remember you told me to get him on the show, and I went to call him, and I was like, but I can't remember what I needed to prep him for. What was it? Do we need to go back and listen to the... Do you remember? You were like, hey, get Joe on the show.
Yeah,
and
I don't remember.
Yeah, neither do I.
I've had a zillion things go on since then. I have no idea.
We're getting old. Do you know that between us, there's like 84 years of life experience.
Yeah, it's mainly on my side, though. It's totally on my side. What are you, crazy?
I don't know. I've lived a lot of life, and you spent a lot of that time in a cubicle.
Good point. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with Jeff Sprague live via Skype. This is BTL once again, everybody. Stay tuned.
Far serious about catching fish. That HDS is a dead giveaway. You've got the best fish-finding sonar money can buy. Time to build the ultimate fish-finding system with LiveSight Sonar. See what your lure is doing in real time. Watch fish strike as it happens. See for yourself. Take the LiveSight Sonar 30-day challenge. If LiveSight Sonar doesn't help you find and catch more fish, send it back, no questions asked.
Gamagot's the G Finesse Series. In my opinion, the G Finesse Series is the only lineup of hooks you need for any fishing you do.
But I know a lot of guys haven't used this hook yet. G Finesse Series has the nano coat on the hooks. And the nano coating makes the hooks sharper, smoother, for a better hookup ratio.
20% stronger than black nickel. Wow, that is incredible. That's a lot of strength.
My Gamagot G Finesse Series, perfect finesse fishing for you.
Check out the G Finesse series of hooks by Gamagatsu.
The heart of the Basscat experience is the pride of ownership that comes with each blast off and every precision hairpin turn. It's a rush of adrenaline driven by the total commitment to performance and the knowledge that no compromises were made building a craft that stands up to the rigors of competitive angling. Basscat combines the latest proprietary materials and building techniques with over 40 years of continuous family-run operation and our unwillingness to accept anything less than the best. Welcome to Basscat. Feel the rush.
Guys, Gerald Swindle, Sunline Pro Staff. If you're a flipper, a slack line hook setter, you're really putting a lot of impact into your hook set, look for the shooter. It comes off the smooth, really smooth. Like when you're flipping, it is smooth. If you're going to be drop shotting and cranking, sniper's the deal, man. It seems like it's a little bit less likely, like on a sharp hook set, it doesn't seem like it likes it as much. But for coming off the spool on spinning rod, leaders, cranking, like if I'm going to throw a big plug at Gunnersville, I've still got strong, strong tensile strength that's not going to give out on me, but yet the line's thin enough for it to get down. So to me, shooter takes a hook set, snipers for everything else. So if you're going to slack line them, go shooter.
The name SPRO says it all. SPRO stands for Sports Professionals. When you look at the pro staff that SPRO has brought on board over the past 15 years, it's been pretty incredible. I mean, one got it just then. From the development of the Rock Crawler to the McStick, from the Fat Papa to the Little John series, when you tie a Spro bait on, you know it's been designed by a professional to get the job done.
Blue Water by TH Marine. Offering LED lighting solutions for your boat, trailer, truck, ATV, and so much more. Engineered and built to be rugged with waterproof and submersible options. Designed for easy installation, Blue Water is available in a variety of colors and styles. All backed by a limited lifetime warranty. Blue Water by TH Marine.
At Duckett Fishing, we have assembled the top pros in the country to help us design rods to give you a competitive advantage.
Castability. Strength. Durability. Action. Sensitivity. Weight and balance. And consistency.
Combine that with the best warranty in the industry, and you have rods that are pro-driven.
Duckett Fishing. Pro-driven.
Hey guys, Cliff Perch here with AFCO. I've got the new camo hooded Reaper. It's gonna be a great thing both for fishing and hunting this fall. I can tell you a couple of the features about it. Got the face mask like all the Reapers do, vented in front. It's got the fleece on the inside, so it's really comfortable. It's super warm. When you come down to the pocket, it's got this little snap system called Block Tapey, and it's silent. You know, it doesn't make that sound that other snaps and other systems that hook it together make. Great for hunting, and it's gonna keep that stuff in your pocket.
I got my power pole down, stuck in the mud in the bottom of the lake, sitting so still in the wind and the waves, could even be a hurricane. I got my power pole down.
It's about the hours spent getting everything just right. It's the attention to detail. Good just isn't good enough. It's the years spent on the water, day after day. When you tie on a bait by Strike King, you're standing on the shoulders of legends.
All right, we are back. Did you not realize you were hot?
No.
You're hot.
I got a text from Dave who's like, dude, what happened to the show? And I'm like, we're on live right now, yes, dude.
We're fine.
Check your stuff. It's on your end.
It's all good. Hey, by the way, I forgot to mention this. I watched a really, really cool documentary. It was about a 20-minute documentary this weekend.
On?
And a very interesting concept on how they poise the questions to this individual. And I don't even want to get into it. It was a music documentary. But they had this guy that was very influential back in the 80s, the early 80s, and really all the way through. It wasn't disco, all right? It was a punk rock thing. And this guy's in his 60s. He's 63 years old now. And they sat him at a table, and they had all these post-it notes with either one word, two words, or a four-word question on it. But he couldn't see him. So he would sit at this table, and he would pick a post-it note, and it would have, like, a word on there, Johnny Rotten.
That's two words, but...
Okay, anyway... And then he would have to respond based upon what was on the post-it note. Well, some of the ones he didn't want to talk about. He'd say, oh, that's effing stupid. You know, and he'd crumble it up and...
That's classless.
Toss it away.
So right? Classless.
But the questions actually came from a group of fans.
Right.
And I thought it was a really cool way.
Was it on like Fuse or what?
No, it was on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was on YouTube. It's pretty cool. I could see doing that. How cool would it be to do something like that with, you know, with Ike or with Kevin or with Skeet, where they have 100 post-it notes just at a table and you have these things, you know, it could be polygraph, one word, right? And then he has to comment on Okay, what's the
wherever
meaning?
He wants to take that.
Yeah. And it's basically a really cool way for the guy to open up about something that may or may not have would have been positioned in a certain way by somebody that was doing an interview.
I like it. So like you have Jeff Sprague sitting at the table. He pulls a post-it note up. It says Bud Light. He says, F that. He crumples it up and throws it away.
Pretty much. Pretty much. So I think we're going to try and do that. I really think that's a cool idea.
Are you going to set them right here?
Not with you.
No, but set them right here with the post-it notes?
Yeah. Yeah. Huh? I think it's a cool idea.
I'm on board with it.
All right. We are going to go to our Skype feed here. Let me get it queued up and go to Mr. Set this up one more time for us, Matt.
Jeff Sprague was a rookie last year, or 2014, and we talked to him before every tournament over on Bass Zone and stuff, and then he is on the Keystone Light team last year, and then they came out with a press release just now. You know, we've had Peter T on. We've been talking about the changes in the Opens, all that stuff over on FLW, and he's back as the lone Keystone Light pro.
Think so?
I mean, well, if any of those facts are incorrect, I'm sure he'll straighten me out, but...
All right, let's bring him in. Jeff, you there, man?
I am. Good morning, guys.
All right, thanks for being on. Got you live via Skype. Good stuff. And all right, already on the instant feedback, somebody wants to know how many cases of Keystone Light you have in the fridge right now.
Well, my fridge doesn't hold too many cases, but I do have a 30 back in there. So okay. Whenever you guys are in town, let me know. I definitely take care of it.
Now, when I was an ardent Keystone Light consumer, we called that a cube of keys.
Absolutely.
Hey, broski, will you pick up a cube of keys on the way over?
You know, don't get mistaken, Matt. The Keystones aren't just for those college kids anymore. I've seen a peek in your refrigerator. I know what's going around in there.
Hey, I didn't say I was in college then. I could have been last week.
Hey, he just has the stuff in there that says beer on the side of it. That's it in the white can. Beer.
I make my own.
Make your own. Oh, yeah, right. All right, man. You know, I appreciate you taking time out to come on. And are you the only Keystone Pro, Keystone Light Pro now? Do you know?
I believe I am. Yes, I am.
Okay. I don't know how much you can divulge. And I don't know, obviously, we need to keep this to where we don't want to get you in trouble or anything. But can you... tell and share with the viewers and the listeners how these deals came about, how your deal came about, and kind of how the whole thing got structured.
You know, there's so many different ways I believe that FLW and their partners come about relationships with anglers. And my specific deal was, and I'm not going to go into details. Obviously, we kind of talked about that before the show started a little bit. And they had a little bit of budget room left over, and I believe that, you know, if I've been, I wouldn't even say a poster child, but I've been with FLW since the beginning of my career. I started off in the back of the boat, just a working guy like everybody else. I was a firefighter, police officer, EMT, worked all the time, and fished on my weekends, and I was able to kind of progress that. I did really well starting off with your Angler of the Year in Texas, and then moving on up into the tour as a co-angler. And that's where I always had success. I always, you know, seemed to be in the top 10 or so. And at that point, I had kind of made a decision, as well as, you know, some of my close personal friends who were also, they've pros, been fishing on the front end for a long time, both in the elites and on the tour. They're with the encouragement of them. They're like, you need to make the step, you know, get out of the back of the boat. So I did that. And after I paid my own way for the first year, and I had planned to continue to do so. To fish out of my pocket off of my winnings. And so that being said, I kind of fit into the FLW family, starting from where their roots, as a co-angler at a smaller level and then progressing up. And I think that they can kind of build a basis and then also show what anybody can do if they have the drive and want to, that you can start at the bottom and actually rise to the top and then actually become, you know, a sponsored pro by one of their premier sponsors. And I have some huge shoes to fill on that Keystone Light deal. People might not realize, you know, you're looking at Ayler and Grigsby and these guys who have been around it for years, who I look up to, so that's kind of a big deal. I think that's kind of how I fell into it. And obviously you can catch fish, you know, it doesn't happen everywhere. Everybody's going to have good ones and bad ones, but I was able to kind of always be a little bit consistent, if you will, and be able to be a good, wholesome part of that and speak about the sponsors and so forth. And that's kind of helped me a lot.
Jeff, one of the things we talk about a lot on the show is, you know, particularly over on the Bass side, is they don't give guys a lot of time as far as there's a whole group of guys. Are they in? Are they out? How do you get your title sponsor to get everything ready in time? When it comes to those FLW team deals, is there a long window of, well, am I going to get to do this again? Am I not? Is FLW, I mean, this seems to be good. It's in November. The season doesn't start until, March? February, March, so that seems to give you end of January. Yes. This time, okay, so they went back an extra early month. But just talk about that. Is there a lot of limbo time in between there when you're one of those team deal guys?
You know, my first year with Keystone was a small deal. I didn't have a full team deal or anything like that. I believe there was just budget space for that, and they allowed – that's where I came in on it. I built a relationship with those companies, and I've become, friends, if you will, and then also you build a business relationship on top of your friendship with those companies, and that they kind of will let you know a lot of times, the company will, if they're going to continue their partnership with FLW and you a lot of times. I already knew, without saying too much, that I would be more than likely a part of the deal in 2016 just based off my relationship with Keystone Light and their representatives. I spent a lot of time with those guys this in the off season after the tour this year, with promo fishing and taking those guys out and spending time with them. That itself is huge in a part of the industry, and I think that a lot of people don't understand that. When I say a lot of people, I'm not referring to pros. I'm not talking about guys who fish at our levels. It's the guys who fish a little bit lower levels, like where we all started from, you know, our club tournaments, your local state levels, that always want to just go and get a sponsorship from somebody, and they don't have that relationship. It takes a long time to build those relationships.
I was thinking back, and I mean, the first one that comes to mind is Brad Wall's Hooter sponsorship. I mean, that had to be a fun rig to drive across the country. But outside of that, I mean, you're towing, a Keystone Light wrap across the country. And now, are you going to have your truck wrap this year too as well? Or
yes, this year FLW has a partnership with Ram, Ram Trucks. I'll be driving a Ram truck with the Keystone Light Ranger. Obviously, that's my setup. So I get a lot of approach. I get approached so much, and it's awesome to be able to be out there. And it's unfortunate because it is an alcohol company that I'm not able to really hand a lot of things over to the kids. We do have a lot of things that I'm able to hand out. You know, I don't want to go around handing out a bunch of stuff to a kid and he go to his grandmother's house with a Keystone pair of sunglasses on.
You hand him a buck knife, and then Bill Lowen hands him a buck knife.
Gets you in a bit of a bad spot. But, you know, to be able to interact with the age group that Keystone Light with the age, and you say I say that, and I shouldn't, because the age group,
over 21.
You know, that 22 to 35 area, you know, they're like, oh, Keystone, you know, everybody gives you a hard time, but they love it. I mean, it's actually a huge promo, and I think Keystone and any other sponsor out there would get their just dollar for what they have going down the road and the amount of exposure that they get.
Okay, so along those lines, you got the team deal. That's on the front of your jersey. One of the things that FLW has come out with this year is a little bit more relaxed for certain anglers as far as the other logos that they can have on their jersey. Obviously, you'll all 4 days have the Keystone boat because you would have had it, I think, anyway with the team deal. But just talk about the stuff that's surrounding the Keystone Light logo and how FLW's kind of made it maybe a little more easier to add some of those logos as far as, you know, other sponsors and stuff.
Yeah, the deal with the additional sponsors, you know, we've all have sponsors that help us get where we're going to go.
Right.
And that's a huge part. And those sponsors deserve their time, whether it be on the show, whether it be on stage, whether it be just in the crowd signing autographs, whatever the case may be when we're on tour. And, you know, it was a hindrance having to change out of jerseys, obviously, that wasn't approved, whether it be a conflict of sponsors with FLW or however that worked. And now we're able to bring on our sponsors and actually have them take the full ride, the full amount of time with us. that's huge in a big respect to those people, because they pay money to get there, and for us to have had to pull them off of our pull them off of our shirt or change shirts to be able to make the requirements that FLW has set. And it's nothing. I mean, FLW is they kind of had that whole deal set up to where it was good for them. And good for the anglers as well. They tried to have a happy medium there. And, you know, you can't make everybody happy, and you never will, no matter which way you go with this deal. You guys know that, if anybody knows. So the sponsorships, it's good. I mean, I'm happy that we're able to wear our sponsorship stuff. Even if I wasn't a Keystone Light Pro, it would be a beneficial deal for me to be able to help sell sponsorships to those individuals, because they do get the full 4 days.
Jeff, what are some of your responsibilities with this sponsorship that are off the water? Is there obligations to take distributors out? Because I know the whole beer distribution business is massive based upon the wholesalers and everything. What are some of the other things off the water that you have to do with this sponsorship?
You know, with any sponsorship, there's underlying things that go on off scenes, like you're talking about there. Whether it be, obviously, I do take fishing trips. I take, whether it be a distributor or someone that Keystone Light feels is important. I've even taken Keystone Light employees fishing that just deserve, they have a kudos, whatever the case may be with them. And it's kind of, it's a reward, it's a treat for Keystone Light to offer that to their employees, as well as I'm a tool and a resource for Keystone Light or for any other company to, reward or have that as an incentive for another company. If you're going to bring someone on board, or if you've done a good job, it's basically, I'm taking fishing. I do appearances for Keystone Light. I do store openings. It's great to have that advertisement, for people. And we all know what goes on in the fishing industry, and we all know that how big or how small it can be. And it's a huge deal when you pull up with a truck and a boat in front of a grand opening of a store, or just a store that sells a lot of Keystone Light, and we set it up for 4 hours. And we're there signing autographs and just taking pictures and things. And I mean, it doesn't matter who you are, whether you're just a fisherman or whether you're a race car driver or whether you're a musician. People want to, to be at that level and just to be with the general public and for them to see it is great exposure. And you would be surprised, if you don't already know, how many people don't know or just are oblivious to what the sport is. And it's huge for us to get out there and just explain it and to let everybody know exactly what fishing is about, that we're, and that's a big deal. So every little bit counts. And I'm out there all the time on the road with, new stores, whether it be a Walmart store or a store that Keystone Light has requested. But we do a lot of grand openings and a lot of just autograph signings and promotional deals along with the fishing. We're trying to integrate some hunting stuff. I do a lot of hunting as well, a lot of duck hunting and some deer hunts. So trying to get that stuff integrated, but that falls outside the fishing category. So we just kind of play that by ear.
Are you the only guy? Is there like a Keystone like pro staff, for lack of a better term, or is it just
in other,
like,
areas?
Yeah, and is it just Jeff Sprague fishing? I mean, there's no other. I mean, there's no one else with a smaller Keystone on their jersey, I don't think, is there?
No, to my knowledge, there's not. And that was a big misconception last year with a lot of team guys. Was, they didn't see me a lot last year at a lot of events with FLW, whether it be Fun Zones or whether it be our Walmart Pro Days and things like that. So a lot of pros and a lot of other anglers may have thought that, he went out and individually scored a deal. And it kind of, this kind of clarifies that and solidifies, that it was just it was a back end. I think they had some budget money left and they wanted to just sample the waters a little bit. And it kind of developed into what we have now. And I'm extremely excited and I'm just blessed to have it.
Jeff, have there been any additional sponsors or potential sponsors that said, "Oh, with your title sponsor being a beer company, no, we don't want to get involved"?
No, actually, I've had nothing negative at all come off of Keystone Light. Everything has been extremely positive. Everybody is, Keystone Light is obviously a national brand, and I mean, it's it's great because everybody actually wants to be a part of it. Now, I do a lot of high school fishing. I'm a high school coach for a fishing team at Wills Point High School here in Texas. And obviously, I can't use my boat. And if I do, I have to, you know, cover the Keystone light and all that. So, yeah, it's kind of a – but, I mean, I understand it. You know, you got impressionable high school kids. And but so that's the only negative that I've had to it at all is, you know, just – trying to just not being able to use my boat or having to cover up every logo on the boat with some sort of cover.
How's Lake Fork fishing right now? I know you're down there. I know that's probably one of the places that you take a lot of these executives or people for their trips. I mean, you know how to catch them on that lake, and this is kind of the time of the year where big ones bite, right?
Guys, I'm telling you, Lake Fork went stagnant for, you know, a few years. I'd go on a limb and say 5 years. It lost its luster, if you will. Everybody kind of put it on the back burner. There were so many other good lakes. You got Gunnersville, Falcon, you know, some of these lakes that just took the front seat. I'm telling you guys, when we brought the TTBC back to Fork and Combs busted them like he did, and everybody, Justin Lucas caught them, Ehlers caught them last year, when these guys started catching them and showcasing what we really have left in the lake, Lake Fork has been the tourism has come back. The people have come back and realized, hey, that these fish are not gone. Now, that being said, the fishing right now is so-so. When I say so-so, you can go catch 50 fish a day, but they're going to be 12 inches. They're going to be a lot of small fish. We had a phenomenal spawn. The lake is high. It's full. It's the first time it's been full, and don't quote me, but it's been 5 or 6 years. And we haven't had great spawns. Our spawn, and we've got a invasive white bass species that's come into the lake, somehow introduced. Texas Parks and Wildlife, from my knowledge, did not claim responsibility for it. We believe that there were some anglers that were bringing them over for the past few years and releasing them, that were up on one end of the lake, and they have just influx and have had an amazing spawns. So now we have white bass and largemouth, and the largemouth have never had to compete with white bass in this lake. So it's changed the fishing. So the lake is fishing well. We had a high school tournament there this weekend. I think there was 151 teams.
Jeez.
In that high school tournament. I believe right at over 8 pounds won it. You remember Lake Fork's a slot lake, 16 to 24, can't keep anything over 16, and it can't keep anything under 24. So everything was under, no overs were caught, so no fish over 24. I believe we finished fifth there, and I think we had 7.23 pounds out of 151 teams. So that'll tell you, but we caught a lot of fish. The big ones haven't moved in yet. There's some starting to get there, but there's still a lot of fish out deep. We need some cooler nights. We just need it to cool off a little bit more, and those fish, it will be phenomenal. You guys need to make it down this
way. I don't know if you know anything about it. I think I read something where they caught someone trimming a tail on Fork, and it was like a big deal. It was in like a big tournament, and it was a bad trim job.
Yeah.
It was like going to Supercuts and asking. I mean, it was like trying to get a Randy Howell haircut at Supercuts. It just doesn't turn out well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we don't have those. I don't. What's bad about a cheater is you don't really know you have a cheater until he's caught. A lot of times, nobody really knows that particular individual. From my understanding, he did trim a tail on a fish, and that's a huge deal. That would be just like anybody caging a bass or tying up a fish or whatever other means that you may have of cheating. That's the exact same thing. You just took a razor blade or a knife and you trimmed the tail on a fish. First of all, you're hurting that fish, and then second of all, you're cheating. I mean, you're done. I mean, that's a horrible that there's no sportsmanship there, and I don't even really understand what the rationale was behind that. I think the prize for that fish was $2,500. And don't get me wrong, it's a lot of money, but that's nowhere near worth your – I mean, there's no number worth, but there's your reputation and your never be able to fish again in a tournament. I mean, so what do you – I mean, that's just horrible.
When something like that goes down, that causes shockwaves kind of through the fishing community around the Lake Fork area and stuff, just like I'm sure it did it does on Gunnersville, and it did with Robbie Rose a couple years ago.
Yep. At Chickamauga, they caught some. I mean, the deal is, guys, it's like anything else. Doctors, police officers, teachers, there's bad ones everywhere. There's bad ones in everything that we have in the world, in every walk of life, in every profession. and we're going to have them. We got to weed them out as we find them and make sure that we have a stiff punishment to where they're not allowed to compete or be around a fishing event again to prevent that from happening. And make sure, you know, it's just like anything else. If we have a stiff penalty, maybe it'll divert people from doing it. But if we just slap them on the wrist and let them go and then come back in 6 months or next year and start fishing again and they slide under the radar, they're going to do it again. Because if that's 99% of the time, guys, I was a police officer for 6 years. It ain't the first time that they've gotten away with it, or they wouldn't keep doing it. So
I swear that's the first time, man. It's the first time, I promise.
Oh, yeah, I've never heard that before.
That's the first time, man.
I've never done that before.
What are the odds?
Hey, I have a Lake Fork question, and I remember back in the heyday, because I'm old and I used to fish a lot more when I was younger.
Boy, that's kind of depressing.
Well, I'm happy. I'm happy now, okay, man?
This was a depressing statement.
No. There was just this massive influx of people that were claiming to be guides on Lake Fork. It was just massive. Has there been any type of, I don't want to use the term licensing, but any type of control on, you know, being a certified guide on Lake Fork? Or has that just totally went away when the lake started to take a different turn?
You know, that's a great question, Mark, I tell you. I grew up on Lake Fork. Lake Fork and Lake Tawakoni is where I cut my teeth. Loved both the lakes to death. You couldn't find a bass guide on Lake Tawakoni. It's probably 15 minutes away from Lake Fork, okay? Lake Tawakoni is a fantastic bass fishing lake. It's an awesome lake. You go to Lake Fork, and I'm going on a limb, and I'm going to be honest with you, there's probably 300 guides, if you will. And I don't mean to poke at these guys, because a lot of them I know personally, and I know of a lot of people there. And I get questioned all the time, oh, my friend is a guide at Lake Fork. Oh, my, you know, oh, do you know this such and such? And I don't know them. I've never heard of them, and I don't know them. And maybe they don't know me, and that's fine. But unfortunately, no, there's no regulation. If you purchase a guide license from Lake Fork, I mean, from the state of Texas, you can guide on Lake Fork. And that is kind of hard, because you have guides that are out there taking guides for $250 a day. And then you got guys over here that are taking guides for $495 a day. You know, that are, I mean, don't get me wrong, you probably get what you pay for. But there's also, I mean, if I showed up to a guide trip, and you go and jump in the boat with a guy who's probably, if I paid $4.95 for a guide and I go get in his boat and he's got an old boat and an old tackle and some little graph and he's going to try to show me how to work, doesn't negate the fact that he knows what he's doing, and doesn't negate the fact that he understands fishing or something along those lines. I'm not trying to take away from that. I'm just saying, if I'm paying top dollar for a guide, I want that guide to have the best stuff on the market, because I want to see what is out there. Okay, but not everybody sees it that way. A lot of people see it, well, if I can go on a guide trip for $300 or $295, I'm going to take that guy instead of this guy for $495.
Right.
You know, also you might, but then again, you kind of get what you pay for. So we kind of, maybe we need that. Maybe we need guides who charge less, but they do hurt the overall business.
That's a diplomatic answer, Jeff.
Well, no.
It's a good answer.
Does that situation still exist
now?
Yeah,
it did. But he answered it in a way, you could still walk into a bar, and regardless of who was sitting at the bar, you could sit down next to
him
and
not
worry about
off,
yeah, man. Not worry about the billy club.
Yeah. Yeah, it does exist, Mark.
Okay.
It does exist. There are still a bumper crop of guides on Lake Fork, some right. old, some new. Some have been around, but we do have a base core of guides on Lake Fork with a name for themselves.
Yeah,
and truthfully, those are the guys that you usually want to go with a lot of times, just because they've been around the lake, or they have you know, the options to outsource to other guides that they trust, and that they all share. We share information with one another, and I don't guide that much on Lake Fork, just simply because I don't have the time.
Right.
I do take corporate trips. I have my established clientele, and I'm not saying that I wouldn't take new trips, because I do take some occasional new trips, but I don't base my livelihood around a guide business at Lake Fork.
All right. Now, do they still have the massive stripers on Tawakoni?
Yes, we do. Stripers and blue and high-fin blues.
Yeah.
If you guys are not aware of the high-fin blues on Tawakoni.
What? What are they?
Coming up in the next couple months, they'll start coming into the shallows. We're talking 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 pounders.
Are they catfish?
And you were talking 15 to 30 of them a day. The only thing, and I'm letting this secret out of the bag, but all I'm going to do is ask anyone who's watching or listening to be respectful of the resources. It's taken those fish a long time to get that big. Those fish are not good eating. They're horrible. They're grainy. They're greasy. Throw them back. Keep the 3-4-5 pounders. Those are the ones you want to eat. Yeah. Respect the resource. Throw those big ones back, and you can catch them next year, or let somebody else catch them.
I'm confused. Is this a catfish? Is this a tuna? What is this?
Hey, Mark, do you have anybody on that show that knows something about fishing?
What is a high fin blue?
It's a catfish. It's a high fin blue.
A blue cat.
You have channel cat, and you have high fin blue. Obviously, you have flathead.
What's the difference between a regular blue cat and a high fin blue?
Same thing.
Oh, okay. Well, I've heard of that. The high fin is what threw me off. I didn't know if it was some sort of weird high fin looking fish. No, the blue cats get active and they become predators.
Correct.
Yeah, they don't scavenge. They eat. They like eat stuff.
Yeah.
They go after it.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Well, we're on the same page.
All right, man. We're running out of time here, Jeff, but it's been very, very informative. Let's wrap things up. I really would like to know what your goals and objectives are for this year on the tour, and are you going to be satisfied, with what type of performance this year?
You know, it's been such a disappointing last couple of years. I've just fallen right outside the cut both years. Last year, I had a horrible performance at one particular lake. Obviously, any guy who watches himself can point and says, man, if I'd have just caught that one bass, or if I wouldn't have had that bad finish. You know, you make a couple of top 12s, and then you make the top 20, and then you still don't make the cup because you have a horrible, horrible finish at one lake. And then not to mention, you're on the fish that actually were leading the tournament for 3 days, but you're running so far to get there, and there's so many things that go into it. We can't have bad days. At the level we fish at, FLW or bass, you can't have a bad day, and that just goes to say. This year, obviously, we shoot for the cup. Obviously, we go to win every event. And I've become more comfortable fishing the way that I feel comfortable fishing. The first year on tour, obviously, you're just trying to tread water to see where you fit in. The second year, you're starting to make decisions to where you wouldn't have done that the first year because you become more comfortable. Now you're into your junior year. You get a lot more comfortable. You're able to make more decisions on the fly, and that's where you wind up making your money, and that's where you actually make the decisions to win. It doesn't necessarily go off your practice. You're able to go and fish the fish and not fish what you fished in practice. That's a huge deal. So my objectives this year are obviously to make the cup, stick as many of these dudes under my belt as I can with a W if possible, and then continue my relationship with Keystone and FLW. They're a great organization. Keystone Light's been a great company to me. They're extremely proactive, and FLW has been extremely great to me with the way they've treated me and brought me along with them. So I'm in great debt to them, and I will continue that with both companies and look to move forward.
All right, man. Good stuff. Matt, anything else for
Jeff? No, man. I appreciate you coming on. And I guess I didn't realize that when you had you on. You are the prototypical, I guess, model for how FLW works as far as starting at the grassroots and working your way up through the regionals and the Rayovac.
Different kind of model. Not like you.
Not a face hand model type of deal. Talking about a product model, yeah. How they want to do it.
Yeah.
But, and that's just and to wrap it up. You know, that's just a huge deal for people to understand. And whether it be FLW or the other organization, you can get out there and do it. Anybody, if you just have a little bit of heart and a little bit of drive, just to stick with it, don't give up. I can look back at the top finishes that I've had, and it's never easy. And I'm pretty sure you ask any pro who's been out there or angler who's made those top finishes, they look back and go, man, that was easy. Very rarely, if ever, does that ever come out of someone's mouth, because it turns into work. You know, the decisions that you made, and you're just thinking, man, just by the skin of my teeth, I made that happen. You know, so that's what's really huge about it, and I'm just excited to be a part of it and continue to live the dream that I set up. You know, I've had a lot of people help me get to where I am, so I owe everyone a great thanks, including you guys. I've seen you guys from when I first started fishing with fish and chips. You guys saw me come aboard with Gene Eisman, and Jason Reyes over there at Fish and Chips.
Yeah, you were horrible back then. You didn't even know how to use a bait caster. I remember they were like, yeah, we handed Jeff the spinning reel, and he was reeling it in upside down.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. So now if Mark could just teach me how to play cards, that'd be all right.
Yeah.
Dude, thanks for welcome to the Skype world too. For a guy who just downloaded Skype, he was pretty proficient with it.
So. Absolutely. All right,
thanks
man.
For joining us.
Good
dude.
Luck to you this year, Jeff.
Hey, thanks, Mark. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
All right, man. Take care.
Okay, I'll talk to you guys later. Thanks.
All right, good stuff there.
Yeah.
A lot of comments on the instant feedback about that he is the prototype, very, very good type of the term that you use, model for FLW.
Yeah, and you look at it, and I think the average guy who follows the sport will look at it and go, well, you've got all these guys out there. Why do you go with, and not saying this in a bad way, but why go with Jeff Spray as your Keystone Light guy, a guy who hasn't won a tour event, is only in his second year. But then when you look at it, as far as the well-spoken, the willing to travel, the willing to do that, good rapport with the people, understands the organization from all the different levels, has some experience, got in his feet wet last year with kind of a back-end Keystone Light deal, and then has the resources based on where he is to be able to take people out on fork and have some, you know, some of the best, you know, fishing outings that you can have across the country. It really makes a lot of sense.
Very impressive, very polished in his young career. I was impressed. Good job. All right, what else we have going on this week? Do you know yet? You working on it?
I'm still working on it. I tried to, Lucas, I guess, is filming the next 3 days. I wanted to briefly have him back on to talk about the Mexico trip.
Yeah.
I know that there were a couple 10-pounders that were caught on that trip.
Really?
Yeah.
Even after the big hurricane blew through
there.
Yeah,
they said it was brutal, but they still caught some big ones. I also may have... I may have a fishing trip lined up with Freddie Boom Boom to a secret lake that has been closed to the public.
What?
It just reopened, and apparently... I mean, we might...
Here in Oklahoma?
Yeah, we might have to do a little on-location reporting for that on Thursday. It kind of depends, either Thursday or Friday. What do you got on there?
Thursday. Scrimmage tonight.
Thursday, we're doing the show, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Thanksgiving next week, man. This year has flown by. Unreal. I'm not a big fan of all the commercials for Christmas.
You're not a big fan of Thanksgiving or Christmas. You have to see people.
No. I love Thanksgiving. I'm bringing the entire team over, and we're having a Thanksgiving get-together.
Wow.
Except we're not having turkey, though.
What do you have? What do you
Qdoba.
Have? Qdoba.
We're having chicken and beef.
Wow.
Instead of turkey. So, it is what it is.
I think this should be the last week for the old James Brown exit music.
Why is that?
I don't know. I think we should retire it after this week.
Why? I was in the YouTube
vault
documentary.
Oh, yeah,
really, really cool stuff about James Brown on there.
What
too.
Do you end up getting lost in? Like, where you're like, damn, that was 2 hours of my life. Or you start, to one thing and then it gives a recommendation, yeah, and now you're way down the
wormhole. It was all these musical documentaries that I just got stuck on. That's where, as I mentioned earlier, I found the post-it note thing.
I get stuck in the fly fishing stuff, and I'm not a fly fisherman. I get stuck in
Have you ever tried that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I got the rods and know how to do it, and the roll cast, the spay cast. I mean, I've done it all. I've done it in Alaska, and I've done it in Colorado, and I mean, it doesn't get me going. I enjoy it, but it's just kind of like, meh, cool. But anyway, I get down that fly fishing wormhole vault, like the Patagonia, the Sims stuff, the deal where they get like a budget to do kind of a homemade project, and it's real interesting stuff that I think can be, I mean, I've been on this rant before, that can be applied to bass fishing, but just some of the angles and the way that they approach a documentary from a nature standpoint, and how they view the fish a lot differently than we do in the bass fishing community.
Yeah.
There's a lot of real interesting stuff there. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that, a lot of trailers and teasers I haven't gotten made, but a lot of really cool documentaries.
I did watch a grouper video.
I get the giant grouper?
Yeah, the Goliath grouper, yeah. It's insane, man. That stuff is crazy. Crazy, crazy stuff. All right, we're going to be back on Thursday. Everybody hang out with us. Have a safe Tuesday and Wednesday. We'll be back Thursday morning, 9 a.m. Central. Everybody stay tuned.